Nintendo Radio is on now. Welcome to Nintendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 342. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me tonight, we have Harrison Milfeld.
Hey, everybody.
And Colin Crompton.
Not hosting this time.
So, it looks like we're just switching things around, it almost seems like. I mean, we can't actually decide on a host, it seems, like, for a Nintendo Radio right now, because we're afraid we're just going to lose the next host. First it was Lewis. He had to step down because, you know, he's working on Twisted Fusion, and then Holly leaves, and Colin has been usurped, it seems like.
with permission, of course. You were doing the old switcheroo. But for tonight's show, we just have a very simple one-part structure. Which is all about the Nintendo news. And so we'll jump straight into things. And the first item on the agenda is the, in quotes, Nintendo investor meeting, which didn't actually happen this quarter. Iwata was off with the flu, is the word. And so just the sales reports were sent out, and the actual investor meeting is going to be postponed to a later date. But we do have some figures and details which have come out of this, all the same. Starting off, Nintendo has been had a profitable quarter, which isn't something we can assume nowadays.
We can put profitable in air quotes for that one. So
yeah, well, it beats considerably what they have been of recent times. And let's get down into some of the gritty details, though. And so this is the third quarter ending December 31st. In simple terms, the 3DS sales were down, the Wii U being up. And so Wii U sold a little bit more than 3 million units in 2014, compared to the same time last year, which they sold 2.8 million. So a small bump there. But 3DS side, generally down. They sold 7.67 million units in 2014, and that was down quite considerably from 12.89 million during the same period last year. And alongside all that, they update their like million seller list and so on. And technically, this wasn't part of this, but I've grouped it all together because it's sales data. But we've recently heard Hyrule Warriors has shipped over 1 million units now, so that must be seen as quite a success if it wasn't already. Yeah, and yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that turns into a series in the somewhat future.
Do you think?
I think it could, yeah. I mean, they have certain spin-offs of that franchise which do get sequelized, and I could see this being one of them.
One that seemed like enough for me. I mean, it was a nice little experiment, but this is actually nice to actually see it sell well, because, I mean, when this came out, when it was first announced, I just thought, this looks like, even by the name alone, it's not going to sell that well, because I've mentioned how the Dynasty Warrior series just was not very profitable here in the States. But luckily, though, once you put the Zelda franchise on there, it's definitely going to boost sales a little bit, but did we see anything? I mean, aside from Super Smash Brothers and Mario Kart 8, weren't there any other million sellers? I mean, this shipping 1 million for Hyrule Warriors, though, that's worldwide, correct?
That is worldwide, yeah. In terms of other games hitting the million threshold, I think it's pretty much the what you would expect. I don't have the figures at hand. But obviously Smash has done very well on both Wii U and 3DS. I'm not sure about unexpected million releases, but I'll try and gather that data at least for next time.
Yeah, and I'm curious how Bayonetta 2 did, because, I mean, that was one other title I was really worried. given how I knew it was going to get critical praise just based on the rep response from the first one, but it just felt like one of those games that might just bomb. But I don't know. I think it might have did relatively okay. But
yes, I think Platinum Games said they were quite happy with the sales so far.
Yeah, but yeah, that's one of them which is definitely not on that million list. at least from what I've heard, unless I've missed something.
Yet. But no, going back to the Wii U and 3DS sales from like 2014, though, is two things come to mind. It's just one, Wii U is actually doing a little bit better, not spectacular. I mean, because at this point right now, if I were to compare, when the GameCube was in its entering its third, its third year, I think the GameCube was around at least like 12 or 13 million or so, whatever. And this point, that is Nintendo's lowest selling home console. It just compared to basically what they earned last year to now, you just look at it and you're just like, that's good. But then you realize, ouch, wow. I mean, it puts in perspective of how bad of a start the console had got. And
it's quite remarkable, you know, compared to, because the GameCube, everyone's always, been put down, as Nintendo's dark era, because it was like, no, it didn't sell well.
But But no, it's just, I've said it many times in the past that if Nintendo is going to make this kind of profitable or, keep this thing afloat, which, I mean, I still believe this is going to go the usual five-year console life cycle, if we're going to go by that, or maybe six, it's, like I said, they're, to put the term loosely, it's just like, again, I've said in the past, they're just going to have to GameCube it. Just, it's going to be known for a lot of great first-party titles and rarely the occasional good third-party exclusive. But to kind of get away from, like, Wii U, though, is, I'm just shocked at how low, like, the 3DS actually sold this year. And here's something I want to tell you. Like, I think the overall sales of the 3DS right now is, like, since it's launched in 2011, it's closer to, like, 50 million worldwide.
Oh, yeah. Something I probably should have mentioned on here. The 3DS is now officially over the 50 million hardware mark.
And anybody care to guess what the DS sold in this time point, whatever, where the 3DS is?
I'm sure it's higher.
100 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
It's tough competition, though, to be fair.
I mean, it is a little unfair, basically, to compare this basically to the Wii's sales, because when you look at the Wii, whatever, I mean, yeah, I can go by the fact that, like, it had its fair share of good games, but again, its phenomenon in terms of, like, smashing sales is, you could probably look more to it as it felt like a flash in a pan.
Yeah. The Wii is a bit of an anomaly, because I wouldn't say it's your traditional Zelda and traditional Nintendo console.
Oh, definitely. Because, not, no.
They catered it for families, which they'd never done before. But now, and that's why it took off.
Yeah, and a lot of those consoles, I mean, I felt like if I could wager a guess, I mean, a lot of them just probably collected dust, and a lot of them didn't, like, just bought them specifically for these shovelware titles that would just come out in droves for the Wii, and at times they just wouldn't be playing it anymore. But in the case of the Wii U at this moment, it's very... again, I think it comes down to branding and marketing for this console right now, and again, I say this ad nauseum, it does go back to just the name alone is really what is confusing the casual market, even though Nintendo said that they wanted to market this more towards their fan base. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's... Let's just say one foot is slowly out of the grave, right? About halfway out of the grave right now for this, if I had to say.
Yeah. Well, I think we could take a slightly positive spin on this one. I mean, if we do compare this to, time and date of other consoles Nintendo has made in this point of time in terms of sales, Wii U is at the bottom. But the good news of it is I think Nintendo's become a lot smarter in certain areas, and I think they've been able to make this console more of a success than they necessarily could have with kind of the cards they played initially. And so they have produced some fantastic games. They have, you know, really hit hard on the whole digital services thing and letting you download everything. And obviously with the even further lack of third-party games compared to even, say, the GameCube, I think Nintendo's really had to hit a lot of home runs on their first-party software.
They're turning things around. Definitely.
Their titles are not lacking in terms of quality at all, but it's they're on a heavy burden right now. They're porting basically the entire load. I mean, not to say that most home consoles they do that. I mean, although I would figure to say that something like Microsoft's Xbox, both the 360 and One, they really heavily favor on their third parties to carry them afloat. Unlike say Sony, which has a, if I had to say between the three, Sony and Nintendo have probably a very fair share of great first-party lineup, whereas Microsoft, I mean, really the only thing I can think of as far as, I mean, side Gears of War is just really Halo. I mean, I know there's more out there, but as far as the, for any run-of-the-mill average Joe could think of, like, what two Microsoft-made games really kind of help out there, and those two come to mind, and it's, I mean, no, Nintendo had a great year as far as critical claim for a lot of their titles. I mean, Metacritic named them the publisher of the year for 2014 just recently. And again, it just, knowing right here, I mean, yeah, they're not doing as good as what we want them to do, but it's not getting worse, I would say. I mean, a lot of people, from what I heard from a few journalists, just, you know, scrambling through Twitter or whatever, the common agreement is saying, like, they're, to censor myself, effed, almost. And yet, I say to myself, I'm like, that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, yeah, they're doing everything they can to keep afloat, but they, I wouldn't say that they're screwed in any sense right now. I mean, I think everything has died down from the beginning of last year when many were hoping or claiming, I'm like, okay, they probably need to go third party or discontinue it. I mean, I think that talk is a little bit put to rest for now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, something interesting I wanted to bring out of this one was because of the kind of the downtail 3DS sales. Obviously, it's gone from 12.89 million to 7.667 million. Do we think this could indicate like where in the lifespan we are in the 3DS? I know we're literally getting the new 3DS very soon. We don't have it quite yet, but we will shortly. But when do we think Nintendo are going to start officially talking about the successor of the system? Because, I mean, as soon as you see, like, the downwards sales, that's usually a strong indicator that the next system won't be that far along unless it's some sort of blip.
I'd have to say maybe, well, what is this? This is we're coming on the fourth anniversary in the 3DS right now, and I'd have to say maybe give it another 2 or 3 years maybe before we even see a successor probably released.
Okay.
I think it'd be earlier than that. It's just the new 3DS to me is a bit like the DSi. You know, it's the DSi was just an enhanced DS. It had the camera capability and all that. So it's just there to sort of keep the system going for another year or two, and then they're going to move on from there. So I won't be surprised if like next year's E3, they'll be like, this is the prototype for the new handheld system.
But with the way this blip in these 3DS sales, I mean, think of it to last year. Even though we had a few good like Nintendo published titles that just to get over the hump of like a lack of like software for the console. Do you think Nintendo will do the same thing that they did with the Wii U and just announce a barrage of Wii U titles, 3DS titles like they did with Wii U last year? Or do we feel like that the Wii U is more of a concentration point for them to actually keep afloat? Because
I think they'll want to keep the Wii U momentum going that they got going now. That's where I think their focus will be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it'd be a tricky balance for them, but I think they're going to be pouring more of their attention into the Wii U. So I think we're going to see some really strong 3DS games to come, but I don't think there will be as many as we may have had like last year. But yeah, we'll just have to see. It might be literally a blip, like I hypothetically mentioned, because they wanted to pour like a lot of energy to like kickstart the Wii U essentially, and to make sure that had a good momentum. So it might be that they kind of balance themselves back out shortly, and we see there's, you know, a more even spread of content across both. But we'll have to see. I think if I'm putting my analytic cap on, I think we will see a successor announced probably, if I go put my real analytical hat on now, next fiscal year. Just to see me, they'll probably do it after the holiday system and do a weird release that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I'm quite intrigued to see how well the new 3DS does, because obviously it has been out in Japan for some months now, and Australia as well. And even with those two markets, well, there obviously hadn't been a bump. Without them, I don't know how much that affected those 3DS sales. But yeah, be interested to see how the American and European launches go. But yeah, I think now we will move on to our next section, just in case, unless anyone else has anything further to say about sales or future console predictions or so on.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, I think we've hit all the bullet points here.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I wanted to add, though, is like, obviously we got more to talk about this title, whatever, later on, but do you think Xenoblade Chronicles X has a chance to actually sell pretty well here in the States? I know Japan has an audience where it's, as being as a JRPG, do you think?
Well, I hope so.
I hope so too.
I hope Nintendo pushes that game really hard. I hope it gets a Stevie spotlight. I hope it's all over the internet. I mean, they've kind of done a not too bad job already, because the amount of Nintendo Directs it's been featured in, I think a lot of people know about this game who obviously didn't. I mean, it was a completely different situation around the original Xenoblade, because obviously there was the whole Operation Rainfall. America didn't think they were going to get it at all, which was kind of its own marketing buzz. I don't think it was intentional, but that did get people talking about it. But yeah, I really hope Nintendo really try and jam this one down our throats and let us know how good this game is that they've got exclusively.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how they promote it.
Cool, yeah, I think we'll move on now then to our next subject, which is the Nintendo Creators Program, which is essentially the program Nintendo has in place for YouTube curators, I guess. So people who are uploading videos with Nintendo content in them, they can have a ad share system instead of Nintendo getting all of the money. And so this is in beta now. So we have some official details in this, but obviously because it's in beta, these things may change. Currently, there is two types of revenue share. If you do it by your entire channel, you get 70% of the revenue. And if you manually go into individual videos and set those up, you get 60%. So a lesser cut of ad revenue. There's also some other details here that the person who is uploading the video needs to be clear, either in the description or the video itself, that they are part of this Nintendo Creators Program, and the ad revenue is split between them. But obviously, with this now being a lot more transparent than what it was before, where they had spoken about this thing was going to happen at some point, a lot of YouTube personalities have come out and voiced their opinions either way on this service. Although, to be completely honest, the YouTube-ees voicing their opinions are pretty much all slanted on one particular side. I guess before we go into any individual opinions that we've heard of, what do we think about this system? Do we think Nintendo's handled this well? Do you think they're doing the complete opposite of that?
I think they're handling it better than it was what it was before. But I'm not really too fussed about this at all. And it seems to be some people are going up into uproar about nothing, really. I mean, Nintendo are sharing the ad revenue, and I don't see where the problem lies.
Well, I guess a comparison could be that I believe if we're taking both, say, Sony and Microsoft, they don't have one of these systems in place. And it's not because they use the Content ID system to just take all the revenue. They just let it slide. And so Nintendo is really in the spotlight here because they're kind of one of the front runners in this.
It's... I'm in the middle ground of this. I'm not outraged, but also it's a very odd system in place. Because when you look at it, I mean, it's not just the fact that, like, you're getting these YouTubers and their channels, whatever, are getting, you know, about 60 or 70% share from, like, ad revenue from these videos. It's the fact that some of these videos have to be going through Nintendo, whatever, and be kind of, like, okayed. So the thing that some YouTubers are complaining about is, like, well, it seems like Nintendo's trying to curate basically a lot of negative reaction against Nintendo. Say if you put a video about a review that's really bad, will that video actually get curated by Nintendo or not? Or does this affect the Let's Play community as well? My main problem with YouTubers basically slamming this is, well, one in particular, and I know you guys are familiar with this guy, PewDiePie.
Yeah.
And he voiced his opinion about it, whatever, about how it's unfair for, like, you know, taking a cut, whatever, to it. And I just put my foot down saying, like, okay, I know you're probably looking out for other YouTubers who are starting their channel right now, trying to make a bit of profit off this, but you are the last person.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know, I didn't realize, you know how much money he makes yearly from his channel, whatever? 4 million. And when I heard that, I'm like, what the hell am I doing with my life right now?
You saw a YouTube channel.
No, and I think what YouTubers thinking, like, they say, we watch this for the games, whatever, it's like, I really don't think so. I think most YouTubers out there, they watch the YouTubers for the YouTubers, the personalities out there. And not only that, I mean, I feel like this is a thing that's kind of getting a bit blown out of proportion when it comes to things like this. And with this content that Nintendo's trying to curate, the thing I could probably... I mean, people from Giant Bomb were worried about this because they feel like that they may not be able to cover Nintendo products anymore because when it comes to reviews and videos that they put online... it has to be okayed by Nintendo, and some feel like this could take maybe days to be curated, not immediately. That itself, I can feel a problem, but also, if people do have a problem with it, just voice your opinion to Nintendo. Email them, and plus, this is a beta phase till, I believe, May, and which is odd, I think, but, you know, I think this kind of goes back to the fact that, like, you know, people are like, oh, why are they wanting to charge for this? You know, this is free publicity for Nintendo with then people doing these Let's Plays of their, like, of their several titles. And as a friend, a guy that I follow on Twitter named Ace Bandage, he went through basically the whole idea, whatever, just for this program. Well, not for it, but against people and their overreaction to it, is you already give profit to Nintendo by buying the console and buying the game for them. It's just that, makes no difference to me. And does the system need to be tweaked out? Yeah, probably. It does, but I'm not overly outraged by it. I feel like it's just a bunch of hot air.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, it's not anywhere near perfected yet, but I don't think it's a bad system. I think the main area, at least in my opinion, is that I think they need to focus on what type of, how the content is used, depending on how the revenue's split. For example, I think this makes a lot of sense for the Let's Play videos, where you got, like, say, the Game Grumps series, where they'll have a Nintendo game, and they'll have it split up into 20, 30 different parts, 10-minute parts, and it's just video of the game, and they're talking over it. I feel Nintendo is within their right to get a cut of revenue percentage from those videos, because without them, although the people playing, commenting on the game, you know, people find them funny, I think it's, you know, if you're taking away the game, you're taking away a huge part of what makes that show, or a show like that, what it actually is. And so, yeah, I think Nintendo's completely is within their right to take a percentage of those videos, especially if they are actually getting decent numbers. and the other thing, though, I don't think this system should be in place for things like, say, video reviews, which it currently is. I don't necessarily think if you do a review of a game and you use footage of the game in your review, assuming you kind of use it in a respectable way, you don't use crazy amounts. But we're talking, say, like around 5 minutes of video of a game while you talk over it and give your feedback of the game, and that is the whole piece. I don't necessarily think Nintendo does necessarily deserve a cut of that, but that is where it gets a bit tricky.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I think that could, again, how websites who handle a variety of different game developers and so on, how they pick up which games to review and so on and so forth, and then that gets very messy. Because obviously, game sites, or a lot of them at least, are run as a business, and they are aware of like what types of videos will get more viewers in and thus get them more ad revenue. So they're very cautious about that. And so if the Nintendo reviews are going to be, less profitable for them, they may do less of them. And that's a weird, potentially vicious cycle I would rather we didn't get involved in.
Yeah, and I agree in that point. I mean, there's a certain gray area to this program. And I think, like, going back to these YouTubers that are just, like you said, like with Game Grumps, whatever, I don't watch I watch basically for the people in it, though. Like, the people that are doing the comedy involved with it. I mean, yeah, the game has a lot to do with whatever. I mean, like, oh, I want to see them comment on this, but I'm not the biggest fan of just people commenting on games, whatever, because I feel like more and more people are watching those as opposed to playing the games. And,
yes,
thank you, South Park, for mentioning that, for doing that. It's weird in a how the phase, whatever, but also I've seen on YoGAF people saying that this program is in violation of free speech, and then I rolled my eyes and I said, trust me, here in America, whatever, if I had a quarter for every time anybody didn't understand what free speech was, I would be able to afford a new console right now.
Yeah, and let's just say, for the record, there's nothing in that program which stops you uploading anything necessarily about Nintendo on YouTube, which you aren't getting any sort of ad money from. They're not trying to dictate what type of content is hitting YouTube, just if you are making money from it, they believe they deserve a cut of that too, because obviously, without their material, you wouldn't be making anything, in theory, of those particular videos, at least.
It's just the way that it's kind of worded. It does paint Nintendo in kind of a bad light.
That's true.
It's just, they're like, we want more money,
Yeah.
That's what we're after.
But they're not dumb. I mean, people will say that this company's out of touch. I mean, yeah, I will say that they're a bit of out of touch in certain areas, but with this right now, I don't think they're not stupid. I think, but it just, they could be a little bit short-sighted on certain things. Again, this is beta, so who knows? Maybe a weird example, whatever, but think of it to like about 2 years ago with the Super Smash Bros. Melee and the Evo tournament where they would not stream it. And then after people voiced their opinion, Nintendo was like, okay, here you go. You're able to stream it live at the Evo tournament, but who knows? Maybe this thing will just be a blip, or if not, I don't know. I just couldn't help but laugh when I heard PewDiePie basically just saying about that. I'm like, you were the last person to do this. Go count your $4 million that you do, please. It's just, and I'm not particularly the biggest fan of his videos. It just, I feel like his way and his Let's Plays and his videos are more catered to middle schoolers, and he just seems a little obnoxious. But that's just, I don't know. I watch Game Grumps, for God's sakes, and they're obnoxious, but at least they don't talk to, it feels like they don't talk down to me.
I'll admit now, I don't believe I've ever seen any of PewDiePie's videos. Which I think is quite a fortunate position to be in, from what I'm hearing.
After the podcast, sit down and watch and get back to me and see what
okay.
you think.
Any particular pointers I should go for? Because I'm assuming there's quite a wide catalogue I'll have a choice from here.
Have alcohol ready when he does his catchphrases.
So should I just hit like the most recent video, or should I search something in particular?
Just search anything that's like Nintendo related or something
Nintendo
like that.
Stand.
Just,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And before we move on to the next one, I just want to say that, again, as Harrison's been echoing, I think, yeah, a lot of people have been saying this is Nintendo out of touch. But I actually think running this beta program, in quotes, is Nintendo being in touch with this new market. I think they also are trying to look at how they can make more money out of their IP more creatively. And although it sounds stingy, this is one of those ways. And it's also a potential way to get more money out of their catalog titles or their retro titles that then either they are selling on Virtual Console or they may not be. But people are kind of actively using them in this. I'm not sure what particular market this is actually called. But yeah, I mean, you do get these game series which focus on these retro games, which may not be on Virtual Console anymore. But you see the videos were only uploaded, say, like, this week, and they have, like, tens of thousands of views or so on. And so it's technically relevant, and it's potentially a smart way for Nintendo to be getting some more, I guess, recent cut of profits from those games. But it's going to be a very tricky tightrope walk for them to do here. It'd be interesting to see how the beta goes, if things change during the beta, or if we just hear something afterwards, before it goes, in quotes, live. But yeah, it should be an interesting one. Also, see what the competition do. Because it might be Nintendo takes a lot of flack for this, but then we see a lot of other game publishers jump on board, because they've heard that Nintendo, despite getting some abuse from certain communities, start making a lot of money out of this, because we know how big Nintendo is in these like closely knitted fan communities.
That's right, yeah. Mm. I'd be very surprised if Sony and Microsoft don't jump in on this.
Yeah, and if it
proves to be successful.
I wouldn't be as well, but I'm also, people think that Nintendo's not the first company to do this kind of type of thing as well, I believe. Not game company, but I think several companies have done this through YouTube as well.
Yeah.
But I digress.
But yeah, it is an interesting position for Nintendo, because I would argue that out of all the game publishers and developers, that Nintendo has like the most feverish fan community in terms of like creating fan stuff around their series and IP. So yeah, it's an interesting one for Nintendo to test. But obviously, it's yet another one of those wait and sees. We'll move on now to a 3DS announcement. Which is the Codename Steam demo is available in Europe, and hopefully Harrison has the word on there if it's available in America as well.
It is. This completely flew under my radar. I didn't realize it was on the demo, and I was about to download it, and it told me that you need this amount of blocks to download it, and I'm like, God!
It's always the way.
Yeah. I didn't actually take note how big the game was, but I have played it somewhat. It seemed to be a fair-sized demo, actually. It's a good demo of that game. I was quite surprised when it was announced, because it's one of those games which I feel could demo very badly. It's not the easiest game to get your head round initially. And so I guess the other side of it is, if done well, which I think it is, it's the perfect game to have a demo for. So you can actually get your hands on it and see what it's actually all about. The first thing that kind of hit me on Codename Steam is it's a really good-looking game. I don't know why I wasn't expecting it to be. I don't think screenshots, like most 3DS games, do it justice whatsoever. Yeah. But it looks like it's like a graphical powerhouse. I mean, it's the like cutscenes and so on are all like in-engine, and it's these fairly complex like 3D landscapes. And the game starts with like the camera going through this steampunk version of London, and I was very impressed with how not only were the cutscenes kind of going in and out of like comic book strips and into like this city, with these 3D human characters and so on talking to each other, but it kind of then smoothly went into the gameplay without any sort of loading screen in between. So we did like one of those transitions where like the camera swooped down sort of thing. And I was very impressed with it, and it felt more like a console game in my opinion. I mean, I had been comparing this game a little bit to, well, maybe quite a lot to Valkyria Chronicles before getting my hands on the game.
Does that comparison still stand?
It does, which is pretty cool.
That's a great strategy.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be, again, interesting to see how well that holds up playing more into it, because obviously I've just been playing very simple chunks of the game. But yeah, it plays in a very similar way. So if you've played Valkyria Chronicles before, you've got a very good idea how this game will play. One thing I will note though is the new 3DS may help in this area somewhat. The camera control is not quite what I was expecting.
Is it pretty shoddy or a little cumbersome?
Not that so much. It's, I think, just different to what I was expecting, which is, you know, like on the screenshots on that bottom screen, you have that big dial.
I know what you're talking about.
And you move that round to move the camera. So I was expecting, if I grab that to the left, the camera will just keep spinning left, like as if I had, you know, the right on the C-stick holding left, and the camera will just rotate until I take my finger off. But on this, it just kind of rotates 90 degrees and stops, even though my thumb is still pushing on it. So I guess maybe it's more... I guess you can then do it in chunks. You can like let go and then swing it over again to do it a bit more. Maybe it makes a bit more sense in this game, like in terms of how the levels are designed. You don't necessarily need to do more than that very often. But just a very little thing that kind of confused me during my playtime of it. But yeah, the graphics are absolutely fantastic. Interesting voice work as well. I thought that was pretty cool. But it's got very nice, clean, consistent feel in terms of the style. I wasn't convinced with the style beforehand, and playing with a demo, I'm a lot more confident in the direction they decided to go with on this. I do like that how they've given this a new style and not just made it an Advance Wars spin-off. It has its own feel to it. I was very dubious if it would actually feel like its own thing, or if it would feel just like... our market data suggests that things with steampunk art in it will sell better. So let's go with that. But no, it does feel like it's got its own.
It's nice to see Intelligent Systems actually go. I mean, you obviously see hints, well, not hints, but what it borrows from its past styles in Advance Wars and Fire Emblem. But it's nice to see this company actually move into 3D a little bit.
Yeah. And yeah, the 3D system's done really well, and it's quite intuitive as well. I mean, obviously, all your actions use up steam, and it's all automatic. And you can also, like, walk back on yourself. I guess kind of like Advance Wars until you, like, set your actual direction, but you can kind of... as long as an enemy doesn't spot you, or you don't do a specific action, you can, like...
I need to go back on my statement when I said the intelligence system does well when they first went into 3D. Did they develop any of the console?
I don't think it was them. Are you thinking? What were they called?
Radiant Dawn and Path of Radiance.
Oh, those ones. Sorry, I was talking about the 3D Advance Wars games, the spin-offs.
They didn't do the 3D Advance Wars, but I'm talking about like the console.
The
I'm not sure if they did. I think they might have.
No one knows.
Yeah, but I guess they're more like the 2.5D type affairs.
Yeah,
they're
not fully 3D.
It's the same concepts, but with 3D models instead of sprites.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, this is a very different approach where you may see an enemy at a different, like, elevation, which you may not have necessarily spotted. So it does actually use those general kind of 3D principles a lot more than just trying to replicate what they've done on a grid, but with the camera behind you. So yeah, I've liked what I've played so far, and we've had some other news come out about the game since that. It's looking like it's going to have quite an extensive set of multiplayer modes, both local and online. So that should be pretty cool if this can be a balanced competitive game. That would be fantastic. Because yeah, I love my Advance Wars, and if this can be like its, I know I keep comparing it to that series, but if it could provide a similar like multiplayer experience, if it can scratch the itch for me, basically, I'd be very happy. So yeah, I'm looking forward to testing it out, but you can't do that in the demo, unfortunately.
Hmm. Well, it's downloading for me right now, so.
Oh, but fantastic.
Same here as well. Like,
well, I've done my job. Hopefully, it's also downloading on some other 3DSs as well.
This game is sounding better.
So, if you do check out the demo, let us know what you think of it, good or bad. We'll move on now, though, to our Smash Bros. Update. We've not done one of these in a while because the game has been out. But apparently, there's more stuff coming which we weren't aware of. An update, in fact, has already dropped. And with this update, we have new 8-player stages. Let me put a caveat here. Some of the stages which are already in the game have been enabled for 8 players. Players in the 8-player mode. And so these go as Mario Circuit, Luigi's Mansion, Pyrosphere, Norfair, Lilac Cruise, Pokemon Stadium 2, Town and City, Smashville, and the Wii Fit Studio. But we also have Final Destination versions of the following stages: Mario Galaxy, Mario Circuit, Great Cave Offensive, Lilac Cruise, Pokemon Stadium 2, Town and City. And so yeah, all those.
The Great Cave Offensive is now in a mega stage.
Yeah.
That large thing.
That's
yeah,
huge.
Well, I'm guessing it did have an mega stage, but it's a mega stage version is now playable with 8 players, is how I read it, but I could be wrong.
Well, this news is good for me because I don't have to play. I mean, as much as I like the stage in 8-player, I mean, Windy Hill Zone is no longer my, will probably no longer be my go-to stage.
Yeah. But it's cool because the fact that, like, we know there are some some updates coming to Smash, like, either the things they just weren't able to finish in time or things that they thought of during development that would take extra time. But this is something we just hadn't heard of, and it's out, which is an interesting way of doing it. And whether there's more of this stuff in development for Smash?
New characters?
Yeah, but I mean, just maybe just like tweaks to modes or like just little extras that we're not necessarily expecting. I mean, I think it'd be really cool if they just casually dropped that stuff.
Yeah, I think the Mewtwo DLC, I feel like tournaments and that Miiverse stage are going to drop at the same time. Something tells me. Because I think we're expecting Mewtwo to launch, like, I guess, April.
Yeah, I think that's the suggested time. They've not.
I still haven't gotten my CD. Well, nobody's gotten emails about their
I've not got my
Smash
CD.
Their Smash Brothers CDs, right?
I have, which I'm kind of concerned about.
Well, yeah, I've not either, so I don't think we need to be too concerned. I'm sure.
Well,
I'm sure they've not just like sent out 5 discs and like. I'm sure everyone's got their copies.
I hope so.
So yeah, looking forward to new Smash stuff. Anything Verve we need to say on Smash? We can move on.
Just a new update. It's
yeah,
big update. So I mean,
I've not actually played 8-player mode yet, so I've downloaded it.
You need to. I mean,
I've like found some excuses to use it. I mean, obviously not with that many human players, but while playing like 2-player local player, we've done a few 8-player stages with just like CPUs or amiibos or whatever.
Yeah.
Just to see the crazy. But I would really like to actually, because I have enough controllers just like with the Wii Classic controllers and Pro controllers now. And obviously the gamepads. I really need to kind of make some sort of Smash party happen around my side.
Yeah, that's my excuse. I've only got a gamepad, and that's it.
Yeah.
The closest I've got is 3 of my friends brought around their 3DSs.
Well, that's pretty cool.
And that's about as good as it got.
And they even smashed their 3DSs.
Yeah.
No, really?
Well, almost. But it's yeah, so 8 Flash Smash is still something I've yet to test.
Yeah.
It just looks chaos though. It just looks pure.
But yeah, that's almost half the fun of Smash Bros.
Well, I don't want my eyes to bleed, that's the trouble.
Okay, I think we'll move on now to another Wii U game update, but not in quite the same way. we have some more information on Xenoblade Chronicles X, and I believe all this information has come from the latest issue of Famitsu. We'll start. We've got a bunch of bullet points here, so we'll go down these. So feel free to comment. The first bullet point here: the world of Xenoblade Chronicles X will be about 5 times the size of the world in the previous game.
Which that's and here's
my
the, here's
God.
The,
that's what
yeah,
we're starting.
You're
with.
Just like, wow. But no, did you hear the comments about the designers? How they almost filled up the entire space of what a single Wii U disc has.
Yes, right.
They thought they had to make 2 discs for this.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's not part of my notes here. But they didn't say as much as well, but they alluded that there will be some sort of install option on this game.
No.
They said they worked with Nintendo to put a feature in place, which I can't remember the exact wording, but it sounded an awful lot like the optional installation process a lot of PS3 games did have, and I guess a lot of PS4 and Xbox One games have currently, which they aren't optional most of the occasions and on those times. So yeah, maybe that cuts down on loading times.
To be fair, Watch Dogs for the Wii U has a compulsory install.
I wonder why I never heard of that. You don't happen to own Watch Dogs in the Wii U?
I do own Watch Dogs. I've only just put the game in. I haven't played it yet.
Oh, okay.
But it has a compulsory install as soon as you start the game up.
Oh well, I'm actually quite interested to hear your thoughts on that game. I eagerly look forward to them when maybe on next episode.
It was. I played the PS4 version. It was okay. I mean, it was one of those games that built up so much hype, and then when I first played it, it's the Peter Molyneux effect. It's built up so much hype, and then you play it, you're like, oh, it's not what I expected.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just find some time and sink my teeth into it. But, yeah, should be interesting.
Yeah. So we move on to our next bullet point on Xenoblade Chronicles X. Players will have the freedom to tackle quests in any order they see fit, similar to games in the Fallout and Elder Scrolls series.
Yeah, this
not surprising. I mean, we knew from even the earliest bits of trailers that this world was going to be huge, and I mean, I didn't expect this to be as bigger than what Xenoblade Chronicles was, but yeah, I mean, given what we've seen, there's going to be a lot to do with this.
Oh, definitely, and I think what I found interesting, and I'm not sure I've got it written down in here, is I remember reading through it, when they kept comparing Xenoblade Chronicles to like a linear RPG, but I would have actually not thought it was a linear game. I thought it was quite a open game. So the fact that they consider their previous work a linear game and this one not, that really interests me, because they've obviously gone full hog here. Because there was loads of side quests to do in Xenoblade Chronicles, and you had the freedom to go off and kind of do them when you wanted to. And you could, you know, do them for quite a lot of time, as opposed to going off and doing the actual important quest stuff. So the fact that they're comparing them so starkly, I'm not entirely sure what we're getting into here. It's an incredibly ambitious product.
It is, and it definitely seems like an answer to, you know, because Bethesda, I think they previously stated they've got no plans to release an Elder Scrolls game on the Nintendo system. So this is clearly like, okay, well, Monolith are gonna create something that's...
It's like, we're going to do it ourselves.
Exactly, yeah. This is our version of it. And it great. I mean, you know, it's what you want.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it's... Because I do think it's purely from their creative decisioning. I don't think it's like, oh, well, and the Wii U's not getting this type of game up, and our game market needs this type of game for the system to sell or something. I think they've just found some really great influences from America, like from Western RPGs. Unlike I'd say a lot of Japanese RPG producers who seem to get quite, and I guess Western RPGs can be the same way, but they can get very involved in what their history has been of their particular type of game, and don't adopt new ideas in, get stuck in their ways a bit. But it seems, and it was with the previous game as well, Xenoblade Chronicles, which seemed to also take influence from like MMORPGs and so on. I think this series is being really good in having an open mind and looking across like everything for really good ideas, incorporating them in intelligent ways.
That Nintendo seems very, they allow Monolith Soft to do their own thing. It's like they there's not a lot of outside. I mean, they obviously go in to check on the process of the title, but they don't, I feel as if they don't butt their nose in as much as, like, say, and I don't mean this in a derogatory sense, is like when Nintendo stepped in with Retro Studios.
Yeah.
So I thought that was going to be a Disaster Day of Crisis reference. I got excited.
I forgot they made that.
Exactly. That was their first piece of work under Nintendo. Imagine if that was like the path they got stuck on after that acquisition. Nintendo just got them to make the Disaster series, a waggle-tastic action-adventure game, going through corny 70s action movie references.
Yeah.
It's not really their strong suit.
No. It's remarkable that they got them to do it. Yeah, it's just...
I guess at the time it seemed like a cool idea, because like, they were thinking, oh, we've got this motion-controlled console in the works. It must have been really early on.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the first games announced, I think.
It was
cool, like, art piece, and like logo reveal for it. It was a like, game for as little as we knew about it. I was quite excited for until we knew more about it, really. I think they said, oh, we've got this motion control console here. We're doing a lot of these family friendly casual games, but we think you'll be a good studio to take this technology and do like this cinematic adventure, like globe trotting around the world. With guns and car chases and like lots
and
of
tornadoes.
Movie types there. And tornadoes and bear fighting. It's like that appeal to Americans.
It's so bizarre.
It's like, hey, you know those Xenosaga games you did, whatever? Yeah, it's like, how about you do this little thing that's just basically all motion controlled for us, whatever? It's like, okay. And luckily after they saw that, they're like, okay, go back to whatever you're doing.
Yep.
Yeah. Next bullet point. Gamepad will display a giant map in which players can view all the active and available quests, and also allow them to warp to different areas instantly.
Thankfully for warping.
Yeah. I think it's quite understated, but I think this will be very useful.
The best use for a game for the gamepad I've seen in most games is it just eliminates trudging through menus.
Yep.
It's fantastic. I mean, you play WiiWare HD, you can change all your items on the go. It's brilliant. You know, it doesn't sound impressive, but it is. You know, so anything that can stop, you know, stop, pause, go through to warp, you know, list of cities that you've gone to, you just touch it, you know, job done.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's things like having, like, this active map on the gamepad at all times actually helped to make the game world so big, whereas before maybe they would, I mean, again, not that Xenoblade Chronicles had a small world by any means, because it was absolutely huge, maybe they thought, well, making the game and having the map there at all times and being able to, like, warp to different areas with like, no pain, as it were, without jumping through menus, they felt they could just keep building and building and building on this world because it was easy to traverse and to warp around and so on, and it wasn't as easy to get lost as it would have been in a more traditional non-touchscreen controller setup.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also cool that you'd be able to manage all your quests on there. I can imagine, like, zooming out and just being... just seeing, like, a sea of, like, side quests to do. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to navigate.
So, yeah, I assume they'll only pop up once you've, like, accepted quests.
You probably have one active quest and it's like a marker telling you.
But you'd be interested to see if they have, like, just pointers for where, like, nearby quests may be initiated or something like that if you're looking to do the next thing. But yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of like toggles and all that sort of stuff that you can do on that. The next thing we got here is executive director of the game. Oh, go on.
I was going to say it. Tetsuya Takahashi.
That's not bad. Tetsuya Takahashi said it took him over 300 hours to play through the entire game's content. 300 hours.
Yeah.
So basically on par with most JRPGs.
Yeah, essentially.
I guess.
300 hours.
And this is the director.
Yeah.
I remember putting 200 hours in Super Smash Bros. Melee, and that was just a fighting game.
It's good to know there's going to be an impressive amount of content.
Yeah.
So, that's good.
Yeah, I think this may kind of show more to the fact that it's what they called Chronicles, a linear game, and this not being one. I think, obviously, to complete the actual game, it will be a fraction of that time. But there's such a big wealth of other stuff to do. Or, like, different, I guess, story arcs or just side missions in general. That if you do all that stuff, it will take you around that sort of
time.
The
main story probably about 30 hours long.
Yeah, it's the same thing when you hear somebody who's, like, be it if it's Eiji Onuma or Shigeru Miyamoto or any person who worked on any 3D Zelda, when they say, like, oh, it took me 50 or 60 hours to do it. That's if you do, like they said, go through all those side quests. But if you only do maybe one or a few and just go through the main quest, an average Zelda game takes you around maybe 20 hours to beat.
Yeah, it's not long at all.
Yeah, for reference, I think Xenoblade Chronicles took me 75-ish hours to complete the story. And when I traditionally play my RPGs, at least, I try not to get distracted in the side quest and so on. I just like going through the narrative. And so that was me mostly doing that. And so that was, at least in my opinion, a huge game. I'm not sure I'd even want the story to take me much longer than that, if any longer. I think if it was that length or maybe even quite a bit shorter, and yeah, that rest of the stuff is just different stuff to do, or it was just like different paths you could have taken. And so it gives you a lot more replay value on that side of things.
I mean, the great thing about these sort of games is the side content's there if you want it.
Yeah.
So it's always down to choice.
Okay, next item we have here. Gameplay is also faster paced, giving the player a faster sense of speed and the ability to change from a short to long range weapons fairly quickly. Yeah, I think we've kind of like seen a glimpse of this through obviously the various videos we've had through Nintendo Directs and so on.
Yeah, with the Treehouse played it, you can see it clearly that the combat system's it's very quick. And
you would think that this would be fast just to go around this world aside from a warp point. I mean, but also you have those mechs, or they're actually called dolls, which had to move around. So,
very good point. Yeah, I imagine fighting inside the dolls, as it were. You would want, I guess, a quicker combat in a lot of more of the more casual encounters.
Yeah.
It's also going to add some very awkward phrasing whenever when I'm playing that game. It's like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm playing with my dolls.
Yeah, I think confirmed if that's like the localization name yet or...
Well, that's
I guess
name...
not.
It is.
That's the name of them in the previous games, in the old series.
Oh, fair enough. Then.
They were called dolls instead of mechs, so... I'm pretty sure they'll carry over.
Yeah, they'll keep it the same then. Fair enough. Be careful with our wording going.
Wait, in the past games, Colin, you mean like Xenogears and Xenosaga?
I think in Xenosaga, there's a reference to dolls. Mm. I think. I remember there being, you know, they're saying, they're talking about dolls and stuff, so. Yeah, Xenogears, I'm not sure, because I played that game once, and that was a very long time ago.
But just to be clear, yeah, the only game I've played in the Xeno series is Xenoblade Chronicles. The next bullet point here. While there is no healer class in the game, there is a new system in place called Soul Voice, which can be triggered to string together attacks and heal the party at the same time.
So you don't have somebody that is essentially a healer,
That's what it sounds like. No dedicated healers, but individuals can essentially find ways to heal themselves and each other.
I wonder if this is that when they showed footage of the game when they're fighting, and then that it says, like, you know, that button prompt comes up, and then it's that circle that's shrinking, and it says, like, press A, and it'll say, like, perfect action.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was that. That's the actual...
Well, that's in... Well, they had the same with the B button in Chronicles, unless I'm thinking of something else now, and that just kind of increased your attack, I believe, your attack strength for that particular attack.
Yeah, I think in the first ever footage we did see something that was like a healing ability in the first one. And it was something like that, but wasn't Soul Voice, I mean, aside from a new character class, like, well, class in the Famitsu article, they outlined a bunch of other classes on there.
They did, yeah, and they even suggested that it's like different factions, or there's something in a different point now. You could join eight different factions?
Eight different factions. And this definitely sounds like something out of Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, and it sounded like depending on which faction you chose to be with, it could alter like what types of side quests or, I guess, story interactions you could have.
Yeah,
and so it sounds like, yeah, there's going to be a lot of replay value there. If you were so inclined to see absolutely everything the game had to offer, you could go through and play as all these different factions and get slightly different experiences. And the final bullet point I've got here for X is, while it looked like the game featured online co-op in some of the early trailers, the game will only feature online functionality in a passive way, allowing players to leave behind messages for others, similar to the Soul series of games.
Wait, the Souls as in Dark Souls, correct?
Yes.
Okay, that is a little disappointing. Not, I mean, I know Dark Souls, I mean, I tend to play it, whatever, and it was just, how do I describe it? Torture porn, basically. That's essentially as I describe it. But I have people who love that series, and, you know, and I can see why. But this kind of disappoints me. I was really hoping for an online component that where you actually would, somebody would join in with you, but I guess...
Yeah. It'd be great to have this ability to explore this world with a friend, you know. But
yeah, and I was also hoping it with like the customizable main character. I was thinking, oh well, that's why they've done it, because
yeah,
I know, not to be too stereotypical here, but a lot of Japanese development studios like to have, in comparison to Western ones, like a set character, a set of characters.
Yeah, well, the character pre-made.
Yeah, so for the narrative purposes, so they can tell a very particular story. Whereas a lot of the Western RPGs lean towards letting you just create your main character and, like, kind of, you know, set your own story.
That's so far my main concern for this game, is that because your main character is your avatar, you create him. Is his backstory or her backstory going to be quite bland? They have to sort of be generic about it?
I guess possibly, but they can always lean on the cast which surrounds you.
True.
And which, obviously, they have full control over, so I don't think it's going to be too bad.
Or they could do basically what they did in Fire Emblem Awakening, is that you have a set name for the character, or you can change, oh no, maybe something in that way, and it is given voice roles based on what gender you choose.
But now, I mean, from what I, you know, from Xenoblade Chronicles, I know they can tell a fantastic story. I don't think they'll disappoint with X, so they will find a way. Whether your main character is just kind of always there witnessing the crazy stuff which is going on, which maybe is how they take it. But yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of dramatic moments in this game. Maybe they're not going directly through the main character, in quotes. But, you know, the people in your party. Yeah, I do not think this game's going to disappoint on the story angle. Yeah, I mean, I guess it'd be interesting to see how they justify the custom element beyond how, you know, because custom characters are cool, to be fair. I mean, you know, creating a character which looks like either you or like just a random character you have created, or, you know, think would be cool in this world, it's cool to see. But it'd be interesting to see if they've got any other reasoning for it. Like, if there's some sort of mechanic there which makes it, you know, justifies it in any sort of way.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like you said, that's what people thought, that the online...
Exactly, yeah.
It's going to be part so you can show off your character. This is what I've got for him or her. Yeah. You know. But if it's not that, then...
Well, maybe, I mean, it might play into that, because obviously, like, in the Soul series, not a series I've ever played, but one I have heard quite a few things about.
Yeah.
Is it not true that you can, like witness your other characters' ghosts, for example? But maybe they could do some sort of...
You can leave a hologram projection on your
character. Yeah, something like that.
That'd be quite cool.
And so you can, like... make contact with other people, but not in actual real time.
No.
But yeah, I'm sure they'll have some clever uses of that. But yeah, the final thing we have here on our list of news for today, I probably should reorder this because we're ending on a bit of a down note, is Sega is downsizing, at least somewhat, and to focus on digital and PC gaming. Which is the headline, at least. Sega is undergoing some restructuring at its American-based office. It's being relocated from San Francisco to Southern California. Approximately 300 employees are going to be offered voluntary retirement. And Sega focuses its company's efforts on digital and PC. And I think a lot of the digital there is also their phone-based games. Their freemium stuff. So yeah, I mean, cover the obvious stuff. Very sad news for everyone involved. It's always real shame to see any company really having to downsize. Having a lot of hard workers having to leave the company one way or another. But in this particular case, Sega, unfortunately, probably has been on the cards for some time.
Oh yeah, I was going to say Sega's hasn't had the greatest run of success since leaving the console market, I suppose.
It had a very good start as a third party, like just solely as a software maker, but yeah. as like the next generation, like after what the Xbox and PS2 and GameCube, you just saw the quality kind of start to finally dip a little bit, and just to stir the pot a little bit though. What do you think the chances are of Nintendo just buying this company?
It's probably not out of the realms of possibility. But I don't know.
It goes alongside my fear rumor, like my rumors of basically of Disney buying Nintendo, which I would think like I'm not sure what to think of that.
Yeah, well, that would be a weird one to manage.
That would be very strange. That's a strange world to live in.
That would almost have to be its own feature, I think. obviously, Nintendo has had a very close relationship with Sega, even during the Wii, where a lot of third-party companies have, not developed games for it. We have seen exclusive Sonic games, we've seen Sega produce other games for the system. Obviously, games are of, some of their games are of questionable quality, specifically the latest Sonic game, Sonic Boom.
Boom was going to get mentioned.
The Sonic game that I feel like should have possibly killed the franchise.
But it's a weird one, really. I mean, there has been a couple of, in quotes, recent examples of good 3D Sonic games. But just the track record of 3D Sonic has been appalling.
It's all over the place.
I'm so surprised how they've managed to continuously make really bad 3D Sonic games. You'd think, I think they pour a lot of money into Sonic. Yeah. So you'd feel, and it's obviously hugely important for the company. I think it's where they make a huge chunk of their money from is, well, not just the Sonic games, but the merchandise and just...
The franchise itself. Yeah.
Well, Sonic is that type of game that, it flourished as a 2D game, but once it entered, 3D space, it didn't know how to find its own identity as a 3D game. That's the thing. Yeah. Part of it's going is it an adventure title or is this all on rail speed? Even when they put on and try to mix the two, it almost becomes slightly a bit of a mess. But even when it comes just to we're going straight up speed for, just nonstop action, even they can't even get that formula right what they did with 2D. But it's,
right.
I don't know, even I can go back and say that the original Sonic games, when looking back at it just at my age right now, I can say and this is going to sound like sacrilege, but I didn't even think they were that great just to think about. I mean, when you think about it a little bit.
Like even Sonic 2. Sonic 2 is great.
I don't know. That's just me, though.
It is interesting going back to those games. I did quite like them, but when you compare them to things like I was comparing them to back in the day, like directly to the Mario games which were coming out at the time, there's a big difference. Whereas at the time, I was thinking, these games are, the same, in terms of how good they are. But just they're doing different things.
I think Sonic's main problem when it went into the 3D realm was that they had trouble maintaining the speed. Because that's what it was famous for, Blast bosses. And you can't do speed, that, you know, that sort of speed in 3D without having some problems. And that's what they found, you know. That's why the 3D well, science is always a bit hit and miss. You know, it's...
It's that, and even when they do, like, save the series, like, save the Sonic Adventure series, which, looking back, I didn't think they were awfully terrible. Yes, they suffer from poor camera controls and just a huge overabundance on just exploring, which was totally unnecessary for it in its case, because, I mean, there was too many times where you were not on rails and speeding. But even when that didn't, they just had to reboot the franchise. I mean, Sonic the Hedgehog 2006 was a classic example of something that they did wrong with, and once they go at that, I mean, there have been a couple huge good glimpse of goodness with it. I mean, Sonic Generations, for instance, was fairly decent.
Yeah, no, one of the ones I've not played, but I've heard fantastic things about Generations. Also, oddly, Sonic Colors. The other one, which is meant to be quite good, I've not actually played myself. I just managed to pick up all the others. So, yeah, it is really sad that Sega is downsizing. You know, maybe it is an opportunity for a company like Nintendo to pick either them up or some of their IP.
Starting rumors.
Exactly, yeah. Stir the pot, as it were. But yeah, it is a real shame to see this. But these things do happen from time to time. And with that, unfortunately, we end on a bit of a sour note here. But this is going to conclude our show for this evening. As always, you can send in your comments and questions to contact@infendo.com. And if you are listening through the browser, I'm sure you know you can scroll down and add your comments in the comments box below. We do say this every week, but I mean, please do send in your questions. I mean, we'd really like seeing them. We always read them. And there's a very high chance of us reading them on the show itself. And it would be really cool to have, like, a dedicated, like, listener mail show come up soon. So do try and think of some interesting questions. Send them in to us. Yeah, hopefully, yeah, we can read them out on a show soon.
We listen to you on Miiverse and even Twitter as well. So, I mean, send us questions there.
Exactly, yeah. Just going to mention that one. Before we do end the show, as it were, we'll go round and to let people know our Miiverse and Twitter handles. Harrison, would you like to start?
My Twitter handle is HMilfeld, all one word, HMILFELD. And if you send in, like, a follow request, or whatever, and I don't follow you back, whatever, it's not because I'm not wanting to. It's just, send me a message that you listen to the show or something like that. I mean, I always love to listen to listener feedback and follow, like, what you tweet about video games and what you have to say. It's hard to see on Twitter whatever what is real and what's not real, but I thankfully people do this for me on Miiverse as well, and I'm always happy to hear friend requests saying listen to the show, love it, and you know, it puts a smile on my face knowing that we're putting so much hard work into it, even though we're not writing that much on the site at the moment, but hopefully they change that soon. But I digress. My Nintendo Network ID is Hybrid Meta. It's all one word, HYBRIDMETA.
Okay, and Colin, how about your Twitter and
Miiverse? My Nintendo Network ID is Cole1990. It's COL1990. My Twitter handle is HeliumBard. It's how you imagine it's spelled, it's all one word. And just send us a message and whatever you like, really.
Awesome. I do like how your Healing Bard has become almost a catchphrase in itself, in terms of it sounds like how you think it should sound like.
Yeah.
my name, however, is not. I won't get too sidetracked on this one, but apparently I chose a real bad name to have as a, like, a commercial focused developer name. The amount of, like, stories I've seen which have misspelt my name.
The main one is real Wikipedia. Shocking. Wikipedia can't spell your name either.
Yeah, they're not alone. There's a bunch of sites which have like too many I's or something. It's like, no, don't do that.
Did Nintendo Sushi misspell your name?
Oh, possibly. Either. There's a bunch of them. There's loads. However,
I like the guys from Nintendo Sushi. They're really good.
I do as well. If you're looking for an explicit Nintendo podcast, which gets very sidetracked very often, Nintendo Sushi is for you. Funny bunch of Brits. Worth following. However, if you do want to spell my name correctly and you would like to follow me, my name, and this counts for both Miiverse and Twitter, is Lusion, and is spelled L-E-U-V-S-I-O-N. And yeah, as Harrison alluded to, we do have some exciting things in the works, hopefully fingers crossed for the site, which hopefully we'll have confirmation over, we'll be able to talk about real soon, but we're doing some things behind the scenes currently, and very excited to see that go through. However,
speculate all you want.
Oh, definitely, yes. hopefully, fingers crossed, some real cool announcements. However, that is it for tonight's show. This has been Infendo Radio. Thanks for listening.
See you, everybody.
Goodbye.